Thank you for visiting HawkeyeDrive.com, your stop for Iowa football and men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles, and welcome to our 14th edition this season of the Talking Hawks podcast exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. As I am every week, I'm joined by former Iowa defensive back Chris Rowell. And Chris, just looking at last Saturday's game, Iowa went up to the Big House to take on Michigan. Michigan was the first-ranked team that Iowa played all season up to that point, and played like a far superior team against the Hawkeyes, ended up winning 42-17. As a result, Iowa is now 4-7 overall, one game to go. Not going to a bowl game for the first time in 5 years. First losing regular season for the first time in 12 years. Just your thoughts on what you saw Saturday with the Hawkeyes basically just getting manhandled from start to finish.
Well, we always start on a positive note for here. You know, the touchdown drive, the beginning of the game was just like a lot of energy. You're sitting here feeling like, okay, Iowa would be able to find some stops or either find some kind of way to stay in this game or whatnot, like I was saying. You have the tight ends. They were very involved in this game in the beginning of the game. For the most part, you didn't see no receiver catch the ball for a while there. But after that, pretty much everything fell apart. Where we seen the defense pretty much gave it all up. It gave the offense no hope for the most part. They were in a hole that they really couldn't even dig out of themselves or whatnot. Because knowing that we haven't been looking good on the offensive side, but then you know you have your defense sitting there not helping at all with the calls. You just guys running all over the place and things like that.
I'll just say I don't think either one of us was expecting much from the offense to begin with, considering how good Michigan's pass defense was coming in. So the fact that Iowa was able to put up, I'll say 17 points, even though that touchdown that Weissman scored came very late. The offense played about as well as you could have expected, considering who they were playing. And you look at James Vandenberg, the fact that he had, you know, two touchdown passes the first time this season. I think he's had multiple touchdown passes in a game. You know, they played about as well as you could. But to me, the story here, once again, was with the defense, because for the fifth game in a row, and obviously they've lost five in a row, I don't think there's a coincidence here. They've given up 400-plus yards of offense. And in the case of playing Michigan this past Saturday, they gave up 500 yards of offense total plus. And what was real incredible to me is the fact that, you know, Devin Gardner started at quarterback, which we were both expecting, but Denard did come back, and he actually started the game at running back. He lined up as a tailback. And it didn't matter which one of them was taking snaps or which one of them had the ball in their hands. They were making plays, and Iowa just couldn't do anything about it. And when you give up six touchdowns on the first six possessions that you have as a defense, that's really not good. And I think the worst part about it from Iowa's standpoint is it really didn't matter who they had out there on the field. It didn't matter which D linemen were rotating in and out. The linebackers, you know, they didn't have Hitchens play at all. Travis Perry got the start in his place. And then Morris did play, but Quentin Alston started at Mike linebacker. And secondary, you had guys rotating in at safety and whatnot. But it really didn't matter what 11 players Iowa had out there. They were giving up play after play after play. And against a team like Michigan, you cannot afford to give up big plays like they did this past Saturday.
I was going to say, you know, the biggest thing is that Iowa came in at the right time for the most part for Michigan. You know, a struggling team coming in, you know, the Iowa offense just is emo right now, and the defense is just looking as bad as it gets for the most part here. Like you say, over the past couple years or so, I mean, not even couple years, but years upon years. And for the most part, Michigan is getting ready for a big game this week against Ohio State, and for Iowa, you had a chance to sit there and, you know, salvage the season and win in two games in a row, and then was against two of the bigger competitions that they were going to face for the most part, and trying to get bowl eligible. But that was a rough one itself. But it's just one of the deals where it's just they had nothing going on. They had nothing going on, you know, with the rotation of guys and things like that. And I know we talked about this last week, and you asked me about it last week, but the question you asked me was, are we tanking a season? I mean, not tanking a season, but are we letting younger guys get some playing time and things like that? That's what it seemed like this past week.
I think this is – they're to a point where, I mean, that's a question, and I'll dive into that a little bit later here, but that's something that I think they do have to consider. Just if I could just expand here for a second on the defense, because there's not really a whole lot more to say other than, well, you know, what we saw. But to me, you know, the first drive, teams have been scoring on their opening drive against Iowa's defense a lot this year, and that didn't surprise me. But the telling moment, or I guess the defining moment of this game for me, came in on Michigan's second possession, and this is right after Denard had just gotten that 40-yard run at the end of the first quarter where he absolutely juked Tanner Miller out of his shoes. Michigan's facing a third, I believe it was a third and seven, and they were pretty close to the Iowa red zone. They were definitely in Iowa territory. Third and seven, Iowa lined up in a dime. And one thing that I know you and I have discussed at length throughout the season on this podcast is when Iowa is lined up in a dime on third down and they're going up against a team that has a quarterback that can run out of the pocket, like Michigan has with Devin Gardner and even Denard, but in this case, Devin Gardner, what's going to happen? He's going to run out of the pocket. He's going to scramble. He's going to get to the outside, break, contain, get a first down. That's exactly what he did. The play got called back because of a holding penalty, so now it's third and long. Iowa goes back to its base 4-3, and on third and 17, Gardner's hitting a wide-open Roundtree in the end zone for a touchdown that puts Michigan back ahead. The game was tied at that point. And then the reason for me that was telling is two things. One, it showed that it didn't matter what the defense was doing. They weren't stopping anybody. And two, Iowa did score again, but had to settle for a field goal. And the fact that they were still down four as opposed to being able to come back and tie the game, that basically signaled, okay, they have no chance of winning this game now because the defense wasn't going to make any stops. It basically was going to be if Iowa was going to win, they had to go touchdown for touchdown. And once you got to a point where they had to settle for a field goal, I mean, yeah, you take the 3 points, obviously, but that defense has proven over and over again that when they face offenses like that, they're going to have a hard time getting off the field, and that was exactly the case this past Saturday.
And I was going to say that you referred to that play. You go dime, and then you go wreck base 40. Why didn't you go nickel is my question. But at the same time, I'm sure they have two nickel teams. That's the biggest thing, you know. You can stop the run, you can stop the pass in a nickel, but we couldn't stop anything at the end of the day. So you go dime and then base 40. You scratch your head. And it's just one of those deals where, yes, you're missing your two studs, just like I said earlier. But at the same time, you should be able to have guys to step in and make plays at that point.
I would even argue that you could gamble going and dime on third and 17 there because it's going to be harder for him to scramble for 17 yards than it is seven. But to me, you know, the other thing that just stood out is there were times when he was just throwing. It didn't matter where he was throwing the ball. There were receivers getting there, whether it was Gallon making tough catches or Roundtree just going up for it. There was one play in particular. I think it was B.J. Lowry. I thought for sure that if he just, you know, turned his head back, he would have for sure had an interception because he pretty much threw it almost right to him. But instead, he never really looked up at the ball. And by the time he did, finally did turn his head back, the Roundtree, I believe it was, like right over him already and coming away with the catch and coming away with the reception. And it just kind of illustrated the pass plays that they were able to make because they were constantly going vertical. It didn't matter, you know, it wasn't something where they were running a lot of screens and trying to get to the outside. It was, you know, hey, they're going to attack the middle. They're going to attack the sidelines. They're going to go deep. They're going to try and get, you know, 10, 15, 20 yards. They're going to get big plays because, you know, Iowa, as you know, they always pride themselves on being able to, you know, keep the big plays from happening and keep everything in front. In this case, Michigan was able to just get by. And it didn't matter what personnel was out there. No one on Iowa was stopping anybody that was wearing a Michigan uniform.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Just like you said, Gardner is pretty much throwing the ball anywhere he wanted to. And at the same time, though, let's not forget that these were the best athletes that Iowa played to this day. And these guys are pretty dominant. And they were coming into the season pretty dominant. They had a good year last year. And they just had a stumble beginning of the season. And, you know, you're ups and downs throughout the season, but they maintain to be able to continue to go forward with this. But just like you say, our defense has just got, you know, picked apart for the most part. And at the end of the day, our defense is back. It started out with the safeties, you know. You just can't miss tackles. And me and you always talk about missed tackles, you know, Tanner Miller missing tackles. And that was it's the same common stuff. As long as things in front of Tanner and he don't have to move much, I realize that he's okay. But if he have to move and he has a huge hole, he's in trouble because he's guessing and, you know, and that's the biggest part with him. And just like you say, Gardner just threw the ball wherever he wanted to for the most part. And everything was just, if it was any prayers, they were answered.
Yeah, and then I guess just looking back at the offense, like I said earlier, I felt like they did about as much as you could have expected in terms of, you know, being the production that they were able to get. The obvious storylines here, one, Mark Weissman did come back this past Saturday. He looked okay considering his first game back in a few weeks. He looked all right. He had 63 yards for 16 on 16 carries, and he did have that one touchdown reception late in the game. But, you know, they had him, but they didn't have Damon Bullock. He was out with a back bruise. And it's to the point where it almost felt like, okay, it has felt like, okay, they keep banking on getting both of these guys back at the same time, and it just hasn't happened this year. It seemed like either one guy's in and the other guy's out, or vice versa.
Yeah, and I was getting ready to say, with both of those guys, you know, it's just one of those deals where, I mean, it helped us out in the beginning of the season. We had Bullock, and we had Bullock, but at the same time, with his injury, kind of helped us a lot with knowing that Mark Weissman can come in and step in. So, you know, looking forward to next season, and I want to start looking towards next season. You should have two healthy backs back there with a quarterback hopefully ready to go, and then you have your receivers or whatnot. But injuries are the name of our season, but at the same time, we still lost games. We still lost games, and we lost them handily from other teams and things like that. So, I mean, we got a big stepping stone to move forward, but we have Nebraska this week, and we can't forget about it.
I'll just say this. I felt like that offense as a whole felt more confident with Weissman back out there in the backfield because, you know, and this is something I know a lot of people were watching this and thinking, okay, how come Iowa hadn't been doing this all year long? And that was get the ball at tight end because up until late in the fourth quarter, and I'll get to this angle of it in a second, where you didn't have a wide receiver make a catch until the 8-minute mark in the fourth quarter. Since that wasn't happening, what was happening is the tight ends were getting involved. C.J. Fedora, which had the best game of his season by far, maybe even the best game of his career up to this point, 8 catches for 99 yards. He was constantly being found in the middle of the field or, you know, the short dump offs where he's getting yards after a catch. And then they had Henry Krieger-Kobel got involved. He ended up getting the start as the second tight end. He was pretty effective. He had a touchdown catch early on that on a ball that was probably the best pass James Vandenberg's thrown all season on a play where he's just solely getting the ball off the snap, and it's not like a gimmick like a flea flicker or a double pass or whatnot. So to me, I thought that was an encouraging sign, but again, it's something that, you know, it goes back to people wondering at this point since the team's struggling. Okay, if they're finally doing this now against a team that had a number one pass defense coming in, how come they weren't doing this before against other teams?
Well, let's not forget, Michigan known that we didn't throw the ball to the tight ends going into this game that much. So it's just one of those deals. They weren't prepared for the tight ends, but they knew about CJ.
Well, they had to have known about CJ because I look back at last year when Iowa beat him here in Iowa City. That was kind of CJ's, you know, coming out game, if you will, because he had a touchdown there that helped set the tone. And from that point on, he had a very nice end to last season. That was about the point in time where you noticed him starting to mature more and become more involved in the offense. And then even before that, like when you go back to the last few years, back when Rich Rodriguez was coaching Michigan, Allen Reisner had pretty big games against Michigan in 2 years ago. And then 3 years ago, your senior year, that was a huge game that Tony Moyaki had, just constantly going over the middle of the field and nobody being able to touch him. So to me, I feel like the tight end's always kind of been a big thing for Iowa when they've gone up against the Wolverines. And, you know, from their standpoint, it was good for them to get that going. But at the same time, it's one of those things you go back to, how come they hadn't been able to do this before. But now you look at it from the other aspect here of the wide receivers. Keenan Davis did not have a single catch. Cavante had a couple catches, but it wasn't until late in the game. And one of those was on a 4th and 6 where he only picked up 5 yards. Didn't even get to the first down marker. So when you're looking at the receiving core right now, I guess, first of all, how much of it is, okay, it was just those guys weren't open and tight ends were? How much of it is, hey, the receivers have to just be doing a better job because, you know, that kind of game from the entire group is inexcusable?
I personally feel that it was one of those deals where the game plan was run, run, run for the most part. Knowing that, I'm sure they known that Mark was pretty healthy enough to carry the rock quite a bit. So they're like, oh, let's get these tight ends a little bit. bit more involved. But at the same time, when you don't have – it always seemed like one aspect of our game on offense doesn't work against certain teams. You know, we can run the ball, but we can't pass the ball. But we can catch a couple passes, but this is not working. Our tight ends got going, but our run game looked okay, but our receivers wasn't going. So we never had an aspect to where we actually had a chance to get every single aspect of our game. You know, the run game, the tight ends, and the receivers going at one time. Hopefully, going forward with Nebraska this week coming forward, okay, we know that we can get our tight ends going. Our running backs is, you know, pretty good and healthy. Not as healthy as we want them to be, but healthy enough to go out there and give us some kind of production this week coming in. So now, and we forgot about our receivers. So with our receivers being out there like, hey, guys, you forgot about me, James, you know. So it's one of those deals that we can see a pretty good game as long as we can get the guys going early.
Looking ahead here to Friday's game against Nebraska, I guess, first of all, and you mentioned how I asked you about this last week, when you have a situation where now Iowa knows it's not going to a bowl game. This is it after Friday. I mean, they're not going to have that time for bowl prep where they could develop younger guys that like they have over the years. So as far as this Saturday's game goes, on one hand, yeah, it's senior day, and obviously you want to have those guys playing, but at what point in the game do you maybe start considering, okay, there's this redshirt freshman or this sophomore or a guy like a Henry Krieger Coble, for example. At what point do you maybe get him a few more snaps, or you get, you know, guys on the defensive side of the ball that you know are going to be back and might be vying for a starting spot next year? When do you get them more involved? Like, is this something where you almost treat this like a bowl game where you've had situations in the past like that, or is this something where you just basically – you know, go down with the ship, if you will?
Well, personally, I know I don't believe in quitting or things like right. that, but if I was looking at someone else's brain, and I know Coach Ferentz, he despises, you know, quitting or tanking or anything like that, and he stated this week that he's not going to sit here and let younger guys play. But at some point, just like you say, with a season that we are having, we want to be able to give some guys some good looks, regardless of whatever it is, just to give them some kind of feel to the game. And I was thinking, you know, if the game got out of hand early in the game, you sit here and say, oh gosh, you know, if we're not responding, we might want to go to some younger guys and things like that. I mean, the fans will like it and we probably won't like it, but at the same time, we had these guys throughout the whole year and they weren't able to get any production out of them. So with the quarterback situation, I just look at halftime and say, if it's not working, then just go with Ruduck, you know, and it's, or Skoll. I think Skoll's redshirting this year, but I just feel that, just like you say, at halftime, you got to sit there and make an adjustment, you know, get some kind of energy if you're going to go with some younger guys. So it's just like you say, I mean, the Michigan game pretty much made me feel that they actually said, you know, hey, our linebackers don't want to play. We're going to go with someone else. I don't know if it's injury, but I really feel there's some kind of punishment to this.
And I'll just say, too, for clarification's sake, I'm not specifically saying the quarterback situation, because I don't expect Vandenberg. I know you know that, but I just want to make sure the audience here understands that. I'm not specifically saying a thing with Vandenberg and Rudock, but just really any position, you know, across the board. Because, like I said, you get a guy like Krieger Coble. That was his first significant action last week. He was pretty heavily involved. He caught a touchdown. He looked pretty decent. You know, if you maybe get guys like on the defensive line, say Darian Cooper plays a couple more series than he normally would, or Drew Ott plays more series than he normally would, just to get a glimpse of how these guys are going to look, you know, on film as you go through this offseason, because it's a 9 month plus offseason. And I would think that if you're Iowa, you'd want to have some sort of idea what you want to do. But the reason I ask the question is, if they just stick with what they've been doing and stick with the personnel that they've been having throughout the season, you know, let's just be honest, they're not going to beat Nebraska straight up. If you take the guys that Nebraska's been playing consistently and the guys Iowa's been playing consistently, it's not really close. Whereas if you maybe throw in some of these inexperienced guys, get them some experience, it might catch Nebraska a little bit off guard just because they don't have as much film. And, you know, maybe it allows Iowa to be more creative in the offense, maybe run a few trick plays, maybe have a few more blitzes, or, you know, different looks in nickel and dime and what have you when they're on defense. So I guess that's kind of where I'm coming from more than anything else when I pose that question.
Yeah, I know you came with that, but I started out with the quarterback situation just because it's one of those deals. I personally feel if you're going to go with a different quarterback, evaluate that at halftime. you know, come out with a different type of deal. You don't, and sometimes you don't want to sit there and adjust it unless it's just really ugly, you know, in the second quarter, first quarter, whatever it is, if the game get ugly. But just like you were saying, you know, the guys that actually play, I would play the guys that actually played this season that knows a bit about some football and being out there competing against another team. You don't want to bring in guys that never seen anything. The quarterback situation is a little bit different because nobody really seen any, you know, from that aspect.
I would expect them to probably start the guys that they've been starting with for the most part. But, you know, at some point, maybe, okay, if the defense is continuing to get carved apart, maybe you just have younger guys up front and maybe you get a guy like Alston more experience if James Morris is still battling injuries, or, you know, Travis Perry, you get him more reps. If Hitchens is still dealing with stuff, if, you know, Tanner Miller continues to struggle, you put Loudermilk out there, or, you know, like they did when they eventually put Nico Law back there. These are just things that I think are going to maybe be considered. I don't know, but it's something that I know they have to be thinking about. I know it's tough with a short week because you're playing on a Friday as opposed to a normal Saturday, but at the same time, this is basically their bowl game. And that's even what Keenan Davis said to me on Tuesday. He said point blank, this is Iowa's bowl game now since they're not playing for anything beyond this week.
I was just getting ready to say this is their bowl game. You know, the seniors, it's a rough one and whatnot. And I know the seniors last year lost, I think what, the last couple of years actually, they lost their last home game of the season. And you just don't want to go out and leave your last memories with a loss. So the seniors got to bring it. And, you know, the underclassmen got to bring it also. It's just one of those deals where you just got to bring everything you got. This is going to be the stiffest competition that they face all year long right here.
And just going segue into that first now. Nebraska, I give you credit again because at the beginning of the season when we were making our picks as far as who we thought would win each of the major conferences, you said point blank back in late August that you thought Nebraska was going to end up winning the conference, mainly because Ohio State has their issues, but you thought Nebraska was the best team in the Legends Division and would ultimately prevail as a team that would win the Big Ten, go to the Rose Bowl. Got off to a bit of a shaky start this season, but, you know, these last few weeks, they've shown some resiliency coming from behind in some games against Northwestern, Michigan State. They looked really good against Michigan, although Michigan didn't have Devin Gardner playing quarterback that week, and that may have cost them. Penn State, they come from behind. Minnesota, they beat fairly handily this past weekend. I guess the question I would ask you is, when you see what Nebraska's been able to do, what's stood out to you as far as what's allowed them to take that next step from where they were this time a year ago?
I think because they're so tested, you know, this season. You know, you lose to UCLA and you just get spanked by Ohio State. Those guys were able to respond from those aspects and things like that. And it's just one of those deals. Nebraska's just, well, I think just not Nebraska, but the Big Ten period, since a lot of people say, hey, they have poor play, everybody forgets about teams like that. Everybody hates Nebraska here in Iowa City, so that's one of another thing that you sit there and you hear all the time. So there's no one giving Nebraska props at all, you know. They're tested. They're tested. They're well tested. And I figure that they'll win out the rest of this season, you know. But it's just one of those deals where is Nebraska, what points out to me is that Martinez.
Yeah.
He makes those guys go. And, you know, the run game looks good. And if Martinez can get that ball out, he got some receivers on that edge that can act flat out play.
Well, and
speed.
Yeah, and just with Nebraska, I'll just briefly say the running game. Rex Burkhead's been out the last few weeks, and Bo Pelini said in his press conference earlier this week that he would be 50-50 for Friday's game. Amir Abdullah has stepped in, has filled in rather nicely. He obviously is a different dynamic because he's a faster guy, but still, he's been pretty productive. It's not like they've lost a total beat there without having Burkhead services. But going back to Taylor Martinez, one thing talking to guys like James Morris and Micah Hyde on Tuesday, one thing that stood out to me from hearing them talk is they both pointed out the guy's confidence and how he's a much more confident quarterback now than he was a year ago. Even though his passing mechanics are still a little off and still a little questionable, he's, you know, he has a very high pass efficiency, one of the tops in the Big Ten. And in terms of total offense, he's leading the conference as far as individual players are concerned, and close to 300 yards a game just accounted for by himself. So, you know, you combine that and the fact that you mentioned the receiving corps, Kenny Bell, having a big season. And it seems like Nebraska, one of the reasons that they've had success, at least from my vantage point, is they've been able to find that balance as opposed to being a completely one-dimensional team like they've been the last few years.
And I was going to say, Martinez, he's making smarter plays. You know, with that high rate of accuracy with him this year, do he run around sometimes? Yes, you got to run around, but then at the same time, he makes smart decisions back there. And that's what makes Nebraska goes. You know, when he make dumb plays, then you start unraveling. But this year, you have him here and there, but he hasn't made many dumb plays this year. And just like you say, you got Bell and Abdullah both playing out of their mind. Burkhead, a lot of people actually forgot about Burkhead, I'm sure, but Abdullah has really stepped in this year, and I like his play. He's a real fast guy, and I look for him to actually make some plays this week. But just like you said, Nebraska has been clicking on all cylinders. It might have been ugly, but these guys are well tested.
And the other dynamic here, too, is the whole thing with coaching, because when you look at the defensive side of the ball, the one thing everybody around here is going to point out is, oh, their defensive line coach is Rick Kaczynski, a guy who's obviously on the staff at Iowa when you played in the last few years. He obviously left back in December and ended up taking the job at Nebraska a few days later. Ferentz on Tuesday, I asked him point blank about that whole situation, and he said, you know, there weren't any hard feelings. He obviously, at that point in time, you got to make individual decisions, and he said he didn't say much other than just wish him well. You know, I was wondering to see if maybe it was something, one of those things where, okay, it's one thing to just wish a guy well when he leaves, but when he leaves to join a rival and then be on their coaching staff for their bowl game last year like he was. When you see Nebraska's defense, and I guess in particular defensive line, do you notice a lot of similarities with them from some of the Iowa teams that you played on, just given in terms of what Kaczynski's been able to provide them as a coach?
Well, I think personally with this year, I didn't see many sacks as much as, you know, you've seen here at Iowa. But so I can't really compare a lot because we had Mitch King, and Coach Kaczynski didn't have the dominant players this year that Kaczynski had here at Iowa, you know, with Mitch King and Adrian and Christian and things like that. So I think it's hard to sit here and judge a year, but I seen the Ohio State game they actually played, and, yeah, I've seen some similarities where the defensive line was a little hesitant for the most part when you sit there and you scratch your head when you got that running quarterback. So I seen that. That's the only similarity I seen. I didn't see a lot of sacks, as you know, you usually see with Coach Kaczynski, defensive lines that he had over the past years here at Iowa. So, I mean, with the similarities, that's the only thing that I've seen so far this year. But for the most part, they've been playing solid this year as a defensive line for him.
I know Ferentz might be downplaying it, but as a player, and I guess in particular, if you're one of those defensive linemen playing for Iowa right now, how much of a motivator is that, knowing that, hey, that guy was your position coach and now he's on the other sideline?
I think it's, some of the guys are going to look at it as disrespect, or either the guy just didn't want to coach us or something like that. And for the most part, that's what it is. When you go, like you say, you leave our team for another team in our division, but at the same time, it's a rival. And it's, you sit there, but this, like you say, it's an individual type of deal, and the coaches understand that and whatnot. But at the same time, Rick Kaczynski felt that Nebraska had better players than they did here at Iowa. So as a player, you get motivated. You want to play hard and things like that, but you don't want to play too hard to where you have no energy and just trying to show up another coach. But at the same time, Kaczynski is going to try to show up Iowa at the same time. So it's just one of those deals. It's going to be a lot of motivation for both sides here.
What are you anticipating in terms of what the crowd might look like on Friday, and just what the atmosphere in general might look like, considering that Iowa, as we've said, this is basically the Hawkeyes bowl game, whereas Nebraska, hey, they win this game, they're going to the Big Ten Championship next week to play Wisconsin out in Indianapolis, and if they win that, they go to the Rose Bowl.
Well, I hope for a sellout, and that's the first thing I look for, but at the same time, I know you've been telling me the past couple weeks, you know, more and more, closer and closer the game comes, that we'll see more red here in the stadium then we actually see black and gold. And now that you say that, I'm gonna have to sit here and just drink some of that Kool-Aid. Yeah. You've been fixing me here for the last couple of weeks, and agree with you, just because that Nebraska has a title, I mean a a title berth right here on the line here in Iowa City for those guys, and they need to win it, and they're in it. And for the most part, that we're going to see a lot of red this week, and a lot of Hawkeye fans have been upset this year with the guys' play and coaching. So it's just one of those deals. We won't see a lot of fans as we're used to, but a lot of fans will still be here that are still in town.
Yeah, I'll just say this. I can see a parallel here to what happened up in Minnesota about 10 years in 2002 when Iowa had an undefeated season and a share of the Big Ten and what everyone at the time thought would be a Rose Bowl berth on the line going up to Minnesota. And obviously the Metrodome was about, you know, at least 50% Iowa fans, if not more. And then, you know, Iowa won that game convincingly. The fans ran on the field, tried to take the goalposts out of the Metrodome. I have a feeling it's almost going to be like the shoes on the other foot here. The only difference being that the goalposts at Kinnick Stadium get deflated automatically after the game. So if Nebraska fans do go on the field, they're not going to be able to necessarily just get them out of Kinnick Stadium. But I do have my sense is there's going to be a lot of Cornhusker fans that make the trip out to Iowa City for the game on Friday. The one thing I guess I would say is if you're an Iowa fan, you are going to this game. Considering that it is senior day, I know the team has struggled, but don't boo any of those guys, you know, because, and I just say that from the standpoint of, yeah, they haven't played up to their expectations, but they know that. They don't need to be constantly reminded of that. And I can remember instances where certain players had been booed on their senior day, and that's not the time to be doing something like that, especially when you have their families at the field meeting them. And it's their moment, their individual moment for everything that they put in. And it's one of those things where you just got to let them have that at the very least, even if Friday's game ends up getting completely ugly.
Yeah, and I was getting ready to say, just like you say, you owe it to these seniors, these guys that's been here 4 or 5 years and a fan, you know, the appreciation, because these guys appreciate the fans regardless of, you know, good years or bad years. And because these guys did a lot for the community, you know, for the people, for the state and things like that, put in a lot of hard work. It's going to be a very emotional day. And these guys saying, oh, they booed me or whatnot. And it's okay. You know, in reality, and I sit here and say that because senior day, for me, it was very emotional for myself. I'm sitting here crying in a tunnel waiting on my name. I had a lot of guys going. I was just like, gosh, this is it. There's no more for them. For the seniors, there's no more ball games. Unfortunately, I had another ball game here to play, but it's just one of those deals where these seniors, this is it. Some of the seniors will never see football again in their lives, and you have some that probably will. So, like you say, with the fans, you know, just let's show some appreciation for these guys that's going to see the field the last time and things like that.
On that note, we'll segue to our next segment here, and I'll have you come back later. My guest this week is Brandon Vogel. He covers the Huskers for Hail Varsity. He's also a colleague of mine when I was doing some side work last year for CBS Sports. He was working along with them as well, and I got to know him through that, and he was kind enough to join us this week on a very short week, considering that we posted this podcast here on Wednesday as opposed to the typical Thursday. So Chris will rejoin me. We'll discuss the games on this week's HawkeyeDrive.com. Pick them a bit later, but for now, I hope you enjoy my interview with Brandon Vogel from Hail Varsity. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. I'm pleased to be joined this week by Brandon Vogel, who covers the Nebraska Cornhuskers for the magazine Hail Varsity. Brandon, thanks for coming on. How you been? I'm doing good. I appreciate the time. I guess I'll just start here by asking you if you were to give an assessment of this Cornhusker team up to this point, considering that, you know, they in Big Ten play, they had that loss to Ohio State early in the month of October, and then, you know, the bye week, there seemed to be a lot of venting and frustration among the fan base, and then, you know, they win that game at Northwestern. Now suddenly Nebraska's won 5 in a row, and they're in position where they win Friday, they go to the Big Ten championship game.
The strange thing since that Ohio State game is that something has changed for Nebraska. Prior to that point, with the losses at UCLA and Ohio State, it sort of looked like the same Bo Pelini team, a team that's pretty good when it doesn't hurt itself, but it seems to have a couple of really horrible games in them. And so far, they've avoided that post-Ohio State. Now, it's taken four different comebacks to do it, so I'm still not quite sure what we got. Nebraska could come out and lay an egg this week. That's been the trend for 4 years under Bo Pelini, but maybe things are different this year.
And one thing, too, just along those lines of Bo Pelini, I know after that Ohio State game, he made it a point in his post game saying point blank, they had to win out and get to the Big Ten championship game. You talk about how something's changed. If you had to make a guess as to what it is and what's maybe changed with him, what would you say?
Well, that was a significant departure for him. He likes to play the traditional coach speak card of, you know, one game at a time, our next opponent's the most important. So to hear him come out and say that was kind of shocking. So that represented a change in itself. And I think a big part of it for him, honestly, is Nebraska has 29 seniors on this team. It's the first group that's come in and been under Pelini for their entire career. And I think probably more player-driven than Pelini. I will say that Pelini seems a little more comfortable in his skin here at Nebraska. I don't know if he's ever felt totally comfortable recruiting here. There's probably more challenges recruiting to Nebraska than he thought coming in. Mm-hmm. But those things seem to be less and less as the years go on.
I know I heard on Monday he said that Rex Burkhead would be 50-50 to go. He hasn't played in a few weeks here because he's been dealing with injuries. Do you get the sense that maybe they bring him back for this game on Friday? And if not, what would you say Amir Abdullah provides this team when he is out there in the backfield behind Taylor Martinez?
Yeah, when they didn't play Burkhead at home in his final home game at Nebraska, I'd be really surprised if they play him this week. Amir Abdullah's filled in pretty well. He probably provides a little more quickness to Nebraska. He does really well on sort of outside run plays and seeing a hole and hitting it really quickly. Burkhead, for all his great things that he's done in his career, was sort of more of a dinker and dunker. He found a lot of yards that didn't look like they might be there. Mm-hmm. Abdullah's a little more explosive, I would say.
And along those lines, too, with Burkhead, if he doesn't play Friday, do they get the sense, do they seem optimistic that maybe he would be able to play in the Big Ten Championship provided Nebraska wins and ends up going to Indianapolis?
I think that's what they're aiming for. So he's had a number of weeks to recover, and he probably could have gone last week against Minnesota. That game got out of hand in a hurry, so mm-hmm. Nebraska didn't need him. You know, if this game's close going into the fourth quarter, that's probably where you'll see Rex. But I'm fairly certain you won't see him early if Nebraska tries not to use him if they have to, if they don't have to.
I mentioned Taylor Martinez earlier, and it seems like this year's almost been sort of a revelation for him because the first 2 years of his career, he's been known as a great runner, and everybody's always questioned his passing game. Well, this year, suddenly, he's among the leaders in the conference in pass efficiency. What would you say has changed for Taylor Martinez this season that's allowed him to have the type of success he's had through the air?
I think it's just being comfortable in the offense. So his first year, that Sean Watson was the offense coordinator here, and then Tim Beck was last year. So he's got another year under his belt in this system, and that's really the big thing that shows up. His mechanics have gotten a little better. There's still nothing that's going to, you know, no coach is going to put on a tape.
Right.
To show players that pass, but he makes a lot of good checks, and he has a really good receiving core. Probably the best group of receivers Nebraska's ever had. Now, you know, they ran the ball for so many years that right. They didn't need a group of four guys, but they have those guys this year, and that's made a big difference, too. It's kind of crazy to look at how many third and longs Nebraska has picked up. They get put behind the chains, and somehow guys keep coming open, and Martinez finds them.
Switching over to the defensive side of the ball, I don't know how much talk there's been about this in Lincoln this week, but I'm pretty confident in saying that here in Iowa City, the big storyline is going to be Rick Kaczynski making his return to Kinnick Stadium. For those listening to this, obviously he was a defensive line coach at Iowa for the last 5 years. Left right before the Hawkeyes bowl game against Oklahoma to take a job at Nebraska to coach the defensive line there. He actually was a part of their staff against South Carolina last January. This season, how much of a role do you feel that he's maybe played in the success that Nebraska has had defensively and in particular up front?
I think he brought a different attitude up there. And Nebraska's sort of still calling the defense, and that's still really his his side of the ball. So for a coach coming into that, it may be harder for them to make a mark than it would at some other places because they're working within a very strong system that Bo Pelini believes in very strongly. But Nebraska's had a lot of tackles for losses and sacks this year, which is a huge departure from last year. And I think Kaczynski's a really well-liked guy. I always enjoy the opportunity to talk to him. He's a very honest and open guy when talking with the media, and that's not something you always get. So I think that attitude, they're a little more aggressive up front than they have been in previous years, and that's made a big difference for Nebraska this year when it comes to passing downs particularly.
Do you get the sense that the players like playing for him?
Very much so. I know the players really enjoy his fire and his honesty, and Bo Pelini has nothing but good things to say now. Granted, he's not going to throw one of his coaches under the bus,
right.
But you know, reading between the lines, you get the sense that Bo Pelini is very happy with Kaczynski.
The other thing here I wanted to ask you about, and I don't know how much this has been discussed, but last year when these teams first met in Lincoln, they moved it to the Friday after Thanksgiving. It's on the Friday this year. It's still kind of up in the air at the moment as to whether this is going to remain on the Friday after Thanksgiving. But given Nebraska's history and having played on this day for the last 20-plus years now, do you get the sense that they're making that they have a priority in place here, that they want to continue having this game on Black Friday?
Yeah, I think that's important to Nebraska now. How important seems to maybe out of their control with conference expansion that's happening. Everything's sort of up in the air. But if it's up to Nebraska alone, I know they would like to play on Friday after Thanksgiving very much. Now they've had a couple different teams in there for a long time. It was Oklahoma and then Colorado stepped in, and I think people were excited about getting Iowa in there. It was a game that seemed to make sense. And it was on the day that Nebraskans really appreciate. So I think there's still some hope around here that this could be developed into a really good rivalry game.
What have you been hearing as far as how many fans they're expecting to be making the trip from the state of Nebraska and maybe even parts of Western Iowa to be at Kinnick Stadium? Because right now I can tell you just from what I've been seeing, the vibe surrounding this team and the lack of success that Iowa's had in their current 5-game losing streak, it could very well be a Memorial Stadium East Friday that you're looking at.
Anywhere from 15,000 to 20,000, and you know, when you consider not just the proximity of Iowa City to Lincoln and Omaha, but also east of Iowa City, you know, Nebraska had probably 20,000 at Northwestern, so you get a bunch of people from Illinois and the surrounding states there too, which this is a much closer trip for them than Lincoln is. So, if tickets are there, I can see a lot of Nebraska fans making the trip.
I'll get you out of here on this. This is a two-part question. First, what are you expecting as far as Friday's concerned and what you feel Nebraska has to be able to do in order to get the win against Iowa? And then secondly, assuming that they are playing in the Big Ten Championship game next week, how confident do you feel, or I guess maybe not even confident, but just what do you see this team as a team that could end up winning the Big Ten and at the very least putting up a decent fight in the Rose Bowl, if not winning the Rose Bowl?
As far as this weekend goes, or this Friday rather, you know, Nebraska's really, really tough to stop when they don't hurt themselves. And we finally saw that against Minnesota, where they won the turnover battle. They got out to an early lead. You know, the feeling around the Nebraska football team is that both their losses this year, UCLA and Ohio State, which aren't bad teams, could have been avoided perhaps if Nebraska just hadn't turned the ball over, hadn't committed a ton of penalties, and a lot of teams will say that, but it's been particularly interesting with Nebraska to see the difference when they don't hurt themselves. The offense is really good, probably as good as Nebraska's had in at least a decade. And the defense is getting a lot better. Defense actually is, I think, ranked higher nationally now than the offense is, which is sort of surprising. So Nebraska avoids big turnovers, doesn't give up a short field. I think they'll be in pretty good shape on Friday. Now, in terms of the Big Ten championship game, Wisconsin's improved a bunch since they played Nebraska, but I feel actually more confident maybe about that game than I do about this Iowa game. You know, you go back and look at Wisconsin-Nebraska. Nebraska only punted three times.
Mm-hmm.
They turned it over a bunch. They gave Wisconsin 14 points and ended up having to come back and win that. But you look at it on like a play-by-play or drive-by-drive basis, Wisconsin had a hard time stopping Nebraska. Nebraska's defense is much better since those two teams played as well. So to get to the Big Ten title game, I actually feel pretty good about Nebraska's chances there. And then from there, I guess it depends on who they play in the Rose Bowl. But that'll be an interesting matchup, you know, whether it's Stanford or a rematch against UCLA or even Oregon. Those are a bit tougher matchups for Nebraska.
Well, and I would also think, too, just the fact that they played there earlier this season against UCLA might give them somewhat of an advantage as well because they're familiar with the setting and surroundings and whatnot.
Yeah, they made the trip, which will be in their favor. It would be strange to play UCLA again. That actually happened a couple of years ago where Nebraska played Washington in the non-conference and then played them again in the Holiday Bowl. So, I mean, the roles would be reversed. Nebraska lost that game to UCLA, so they might have a little extra motivation there, but I'd rather see them take on a new opponent.
Brandon, thank you very much. Happy Thanksgiving. Have a safe trip out here to Iowa City on Friday.
Yep,
that's Brandon Vogel from Hail Varsity. You can follow him on Twitter at Brandon L. Vogel, and you can check out his coverage at HailVarsity.com. Brandon, thank you very much for joining us. When we come back, Chris Rowell will rejoin me. We'll discuss the games on this week's HawkeyeDrive.com Pick'em. So hang tight. We'll be back shortly. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. Brendan Stiles. I'm rejoined by Chris Rowell. And before we get into the pick 'em this week, Chris, obviously there's some big news going on with the conference, the Big Ten Conference. Maryland and Rutgers, both on Monday and Tuesday respectively, announced that they're going to be joining the Big Ten. Maryland will be joining in 2014. Rutgers, timetable still to be determined, but my guess is it's going to be 2014 with them as well. I guess your initial thoughts, we'll keep this brief, but just when you heard that, just how surprised were you, and what do you think this maybe does going forward?
I originally didn't hear anything until the day, like Monday or whatnot. I thought it was just like, why would we branch all the way out there to that side? But then, you know, as most of us know, it's starting to become a money aspect. But I was thinking, okay, if Maryland comes, why is it Rutgers of all teams and things like that? Why not Pittsburgh, a team that you would like to see? Because the rivalry with Pittsburgh and Penn State would be huge. You know, that would be a huge deal, like with Iowa and Nebraska or either Wisconsin and Nebraska or whatnot. But just to make it brief, it's a good deal, you know, at the end of the day. But Maryland and Rutgers will have to recruit a bit different now when it comes to football.
I think the timing is a little unique because I feel like if this is going to be announced, it'd be in the off season. But that being said, this is something that you can – eventually you knew this was going to end up happening where this is going the route of super conferences where all these conferences are going to have 16 teams, and I do believe the Big Ten is going to eventually add two more schools to the mix. So from that standpoint, I'm not surprised. When I first heard – I heard Friday night, I saw a rumor about Maryland joining. I'm like, yeah, I don't believe this at all. But then Saturday after the Iowa-Michigan game, I'm up in the press box working, and I see something come across Twitter saying, yeah, they're in serious negotiations. It's like, whoa. But really what I think people need to realize more than anything, I'll keep this brief, is just it's not just all about money, but it's all about the Big Ten network specifically. And with that, I know Jim Delaney was saying on a teleconference that wasn't the driving force. It kind of was because – It combined with the other things that he said about watching what other conferences are doing. Because you look at it, with Maryland, you're getting the D.C. market in Baltimore. With Rutgers, you're getting the New York market. It's not because they're bringing in the New York market, but it's because now, you know, all the Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State fans that are out there and fans of other Big Ten schools, now suddenly they're all going to be able to make a short trip down the turnpike down to Rutgers to see their schools play. That stadium's going to get packed. Rutgers is probably going to even have some home games in the Giants, the Jets' new stadium, or even at Yankee Stadium now as a result of this. And that's what it ultimately boils down to. It's a matter of – with Nebraska, it was all about getting a 12th team so they could have a championship game. And at that point in time, you wanted to add a storied football program if you could. That's why I felt like they got them. Going forward now with these two teams and with whatever additions they end up making going forward – at this point, it's all about getting people to watch. It's no longer a question of, okay, is the football quality or is the basketball quality? It's all about, do these schools fit the criteria that the Big Ten has set up for all its other members? And if so, are they going to bring in enough people? Is there going to be enough interest in those areas, not just in those specific schools, but in the conference in general, and get people talking about them and watching the Big Ten Network? And that's what I ultimately feel this boils down to more than anything. So, you know, I don't know when they're going to add the two more to get to 16, but I definitely feel like it's something that's going to end up happening at some point in time.
And the last thing I would say about this, and not just a Big Ten, but, you know, like you say, we pretty much covering the Big Ten, the Midwest, and now we've reached out to the East. And I think if you go Super Conference, you go, you know, the Midwest, you know, the ACC area or whatnot, and then you can go to South, and then you go to West Coast or whatnot. You just don't want to sit here and go down to Texas or something, just crazy geographically like that or anything.
And I'll just throw this one last point in there, too. In this day and age now where you have social media, you have all these advances in technology, or it's not just you're stuck watching your local team and that's it, you have options. If, like, say you're watching Iowa's game against Michigan on TV and you're watching Iowa get killed, it's like, okay, you don't want to watch this anymore. What other games are on? You have all these other options. You have ESPN, too. You have Big Ten Network. You have ABC. You have Fox. You have CBS. You have on and on and on. And more of these channels are getting added. So it's to the point where it doesn't really matter what two teams are playing. If somebody likes college football enough to watch, they're going to watch. You know, I would argue that the Stanford-Oregon game, it wasn't like it was just people out in the West Coast watching. Everyone in the country was watching because they knew what was at stake, not just in the Pac-12, but with the whole BCS. So I think that that's something that has to be considered when you consider what's going on with expansion, not just in the Big Ten, but in general with all these other conferences. But moving along here, interesting week in college football considering Oregon and Kansas State both lost, and as a result neither one of us had great pick-ems. You went 5-5, I went 4-6. The one game we disagreed on, Ohio State beat Wisconsin in overtime, you got that right. The one person that did actually have a winning record as far as people that did the pick-em, I believe it or not, was my father. He ended up winning it, and he won a tiebreaker, but he was fairly close to nailing the Iowa-Michigan score exact. So, Dad, congrats. You got your prize already. Moving along to this week's pick'em, before we do, just a reminder to all of you, if you want to participate, just go to HawkeyeDrive.com. You'll see the page 24 Heisman Road. Hover over that. Pick'em page is there. Click on that. List of 10 games. Email your picks to HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Remember to include a score at your Iowa-Nebraska prediction. We'll use that in the event of any tiebreakers like last week. And just a reminder, since Iowa's game is Friday, the deadline is a few hours earlier. Usually I have it at 5 Central on Friday. It's at 10:59, or a minute before the Iowa-Nebraska game kicks off at Kinnick Stadium. So without further ado, we'll jump into this week's slate of games. And I'll just say I'm really glad Iowa's game is Friday, because I looked at Saturday's slate, and these are some really good college football games we're going to be discussing here. We'll start down in the South with the rivalry known as clean old-fashioned hate between Georgia Tech and Georgia. Georgia, obviously, is number 3 in the country now, and they'll play in the SEC championship game next week, but they control their own destiny as far as getting to the BCS national championship game as a result of what happened this past weekend. And they're at home against a Georgia Tech team that, given what just happened at Miami with them self-imposing a postseason ban, Georgia Tech is going to be playing an ACC title game next week against Florida State. So both of these teams have bigger fish to fry, but given that this is a rivalry, it's one of those games that's always back and forth all these years. I just look at this, and Georgia's just clearly a better team. They're at home, and there's a lot more at stake for them going forward. Because Georgia Tech could lose this game by 40 points, but they somehow beat Florida State next week. They go to the Orange Bowl. Whereas Georgia, they're not just looking at winning the SEC. They're looking at playing in the national championship game. And with that in mind, I just don't see Georgia losing this game, especially with all the playmakers they got on the defensive side of the ball. I think they step up big, and I like the Bulldogs at home.
I was going to say, first of all, this is probably my favorite week of football, no matter what the ranking is and things like that, because you see some really good rival games getting played here. You know, just we see this game and for the most part all these games of this week of the season. But going into the game, I was going to say Georgia Tech got rid of their defensive coordinator. Now they then pick some things up. No matter how this game go for them, they'll be in the championship game. So for the most part, they can possibly give up in this game and let Georgia beat them up if they're getting beat up pretty bad. Georgia has a lot on the line, and I'm going with Georgia at home.
Yeah, we agree on the Bulldogs. And then moving along to another game going on at 11 a.m. Saturday, and this is obviously the biggest game in the Big Ten and probably the biggest game – well, not the biggest game in the country this weekend, but in general in college football, Michigan, Ohio State. Michigan is now 20th. They moved up a few spots in the polls after beating Iowa last week. They go down to the Horseshoe to take on an Ohio State team that, you know, if they're AD – they all have to be second-guessing this right now because they're one of two undefeated teams at the moment. Had they just taken their postseason ban last year when they could have and then had this year to be eligible, all they'd have to do is beat Michigan this week and then beat Nebraska next week, and they'd be playing Notre Dame possibly in the championship game. So there's that. But Ohio State, they still, even though this is their game, their last game, this is their bowl game essentially, they do have a shot at finishing 12-0. Here in Urban Meyer's first year. They're at home. Michigan won last year's game in a thriller. I think there's just way too much incentive here with Ohio State, kind of like there is at Georgia in the other game. And Michigan, they still need Iowa to beat Nebraska if they want to have any outside shot of playing in the Big Ten title game next week. I don't see that. Well, I mean, it's going to be something where they have to depend on that plus beating Ohio State. I just think that's too tall of an order, especially just with this game alone. I think Ohio State's going to be motivated, and I think you'll probably end up agreeing with me here when I say the Buckeyes are going to win. They're going to finish 12-0.
As Michigan and Ohio State fans call it, this is the game. The game. So, but the biggest thing here is Ohio State got a lot on the line here. You know, you sit here and you look at last year, you know, 6-6 season. You go through all the stuff in off season and all that good stuff, all that hoopla, and then you hear you get Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer takes a team that's been struggling and things like that. You have Braxton Miller that had come in, get a mold of his offense and look pretty good. Did you expect a 12-0 season? Nah, not worth it. But you expected a pretty good season because they had some defenders coming back and you had Braxton Miller, some young guys that can prevail in his offense, because with Jim Tressel offense, they were looking pretty good themselves, but Braxton Miller never had a chance to sit there and play in coach's system. But one thing I can say, Ohio State does have a national title long shot here, and you know, maybe, yeah, but at the same time, this is a lot of people say, wait until you see Ohio State next year. This is a pretty good team this year themselves, just like you said. I think personally, they'd be the top two teams. I mean, they'd be a top two team right now at this aspect if they were in the BCS, because you know, with them not being able to go into the into a national championship or any bowl game, period, they were held back, period, with the voting and things like that. But I'm gonna go with Ohio State, and I know I went on a little bit of rant, Michigan looks pretty good, but I don't think they look good enough to beat Ohio State at Ohio State after Ohio State took a nice little whooping last year.
And the two other things, too, after watching Michigan this past weekend, I'm wondering how much of a role Denard's going to actually play this week. And then the other thing, too, is when you see Iowa being able to utilize the tight ends like they did against the Wolverines defense. Yeah, exactly. Jake Stoneburner, I think he's a guy that could end up having a big game if Braxton Miller can find him downfield. So for those reasons, I mean, I agree with you. I think Ohio State wins. Moving on now to the Civil War, you got Oregon coming off that tough loss to Stanford, and now they're in a position where they need some help getting to the Pac-12 title game. They got to go on the road to face their arch rival in Oregon State, who's coming off a pretty convincing win over Cal at home. They're ranked 16th. Obviously, there's still a little bit at stake here for the Ducks potentially, but when you see a rivalry game like this, or two teams really just hate each other, they're in-state rivals, can you see Oregon State giving Oregon a second straight loss here, or do you think the Ducks bounce back?
This is going to be a really good game, you know, compared to last year where Oregon State pretty much tanked, and not too many people look for Oregon State to have a really good season this year. But with Oregon, I personally feel that they have bounced back here on the road, and Oregon is sitting here scratching them heads because, you know, Stanford beat them, and now they're out of the driver's seat of going into the Pac-12 championship game, and I'm sure USC was feeling the same way. Well, for those teams losing last week, but I'm going with Oregon on the road.
I'm going to agree with you on the Ducks here because I don't see them losing two in a row, even though Oregon State has pretty decent defense. And really what it just boils down to is that it's a combination of that and then also Oregon State, the whole thing with the quarterback situation. I'm still trying to figure out how they're going to go at the end there because it had an impact in their game against Stanford 2 weeks ago, and I think it could very well have an impact here against their arch rival. Another big in-state rivalry game, and this one could potentially have some big implications, too, if a few upsets happen here this weekend. You got Florida sitting at 10-1. They're kind of waiting in the wings here for, you know, a Notre Dame loss or, you know, a potential thing where, say, Alabama or Georgia loses this week. And they go to Tallahassee to take on a Florida State team that, you know, has an identical 10-1 record. And to be completely honest with you, if they don't lose that game to NC State right now, we're talking about Florida State being in position to go to a national championship game. Yeah. And, I mean, that was the team you picked to win the national title earlier this year. They still have the ACC game next week to worry about, but I like Florida State here mainly because the difference being quarterback play. Florida, there's still an issue. It sounds like Driscoll's going to be able to play this week, but yeah, he's been dealing with injuries. EJ Manuel, this is his last game at Doak Campbell. I think he's going to go off, have a huge game. And right now, I just think Florida State has enough talent to hang with a team like Florida, and combine that with being at home, I think the Seminoles win.
I'm agree with you. I'm gonna go with Florida State. I don't see much motivation for Florida now that they, you know, they're not a national championship pitcher here or pretty much a BCS bowl unless, like you say, Georgia and Alabama crap themselves. But the biggest thing is here, what the best bowl game that Florida can go to is the Capital One Bowl or possibly, and that's one of the deals where you got to find some motivation, you know. But at the same time, it's gonna be motivation because you're facing Florida State. This is a huge team you hate, and it's a team that you look forward to at the end of every season or whatnot. So I'm going to go with Florida State. EJ Manuel, this is it for him, and, you know, we look forward to watching a really good game here at what? This is a 2:30 game, I think.
Yeah, and I'll say this, though. I do think Florida will put up a better fight against Florida State than Georgia Tech probably will next week, but that will all remain to be seen. Moving along, you got Bedlam. Oklahoma State has won, I believe, 4 out of their last 5. The one loss is to Kansas State, which, okay, Kansas State was rolling at that point in time, but Oklahoma State looks pretty good. They beat West Virginia rather handily a couple weeks ago. Last week, they destroyed Texas Tech at home. Now they go into Norman to take on their arch rival, Oklahoma, who still not only has a BCS berth at stake potentially, but they now with Kansas State losing last week, they could still theoretically win the Big 12 if they went out and get some help from Texas next week. Last year, these teams met to decide the Big 12. Oklahoma State drilled them en route to winning that game and then going to the Fiesta Bowl. I think that's one of those games that's sitting in the back of the minds of Bob Stoops and Landry Jones, Kenny Stills, and everybody associated with that program. I don't think they forgot about the beatdown that they got last year at Oklahoma State. I think that provides the motivation for them this week, along with the fact that there's still some things at stake for them. The Cowboys, they've been a decent team this year, but going on the road here, I just don't like their chances. I think Oklahoma gets their payback, and I think they win pretty big.
I feel after watching the Oklahoma and West Virginia game, Oklahoma's defense start, they were a little vulnerable because of Tavon Austin was pretty much having a field game, you know, a receiver or a running back or wherever they put him for the most part. But I think they're going to bounce back, you know, after even though they won the game, I think they're going to bounce back on defense, and their offense shown enough firepower to go against Oklahoma State this week, and I think they're going to win at home here for Landry Jones' last game.
Moving along into the Big Ten, this isn't really a rivalry game, although it could potentially be one if they keep playing at the end of the year. You got Wisconsin. They lost that heartbreaker at home to Ohio State last week. They're in the Big Ten championship game regardless of what happens at this point. But they're going on the road to take on a Penn State team that, yes, they did just lose Michael Mowdy to an injury that's going to keep him out this Saturday, but for Penn State, this is basically their bowl game, and for all we know, this might be the last time that they're really relevant for the next few years, given because we just don't know what's going to end up happening here with all the sanctions as they actually, you know, start to have an effect on the program going forward. But as far as this game goes, it's in Happy Valley. Penn State, yeah, they lost Mowdy, but this is about as fired up a situation as I think you're going to see Penn State in. Like, they're just going to be completely motivated. I think they're just going to play, you know, all out. And Wisconsin, you know, this is a game they don't need to win it, obviously, because they're going to be playing next week. So you combine all that. I just feel like this is a game where Penn State's going to just jump out to an early lead, you know, and put their foot on Wisconsin's throat right from the get-go. And I think Penn State could not only win this game, but win it fairly easily. I think the Nittany Lions win big at home on Saturday.
This was a game I was looking forward to talking about. That was going to be my upset pick because, just like you said, you know, what O'Brien, his status, you know, he's not committed to Penn State, but he said it early in the season or whatnot. But it's just one of those deals that, you know, you got NFL teams probably knock on the door. There's some college teams, you know, got a little bit going on because they know he doesn't like the sanctions.
He's going to leave Penn State, though.
But it's just one of those deals, like you say, these guys are going to be fired up. Matt McGowan, this is it for him. I think he's going to play his heart out, and he's not going to let those guys give up because those guys, this is a good team. Let's not forget, this is a good team, just like you said. You're going to see the effects next year of the sanctions and things like that, but I still figure that they'll play hard with the sanctions here for the next couple years or so. But I look for Penn State to win this game at home against Wisconsin.
Moving into the Pac-12, and this is a game that, depending on the outcome of the Oregon-Oregon State game, could very well be the first of two meetings these teams have against each other in a span of 7 days, because the Pac-12 title game is next Friday. Stanford, if the Cardinal win here at UCLA on Saturday, they're in, and they're going to play UCLA because UCLA beat USC last week to win the Pac-12. Yeah, UCLA beat USC last week to win the Pac-12 South. This game on Saturday is at the Rose Bowl. I think this leads to an interesting question for UCLA, because if you win, you run the risk of Oregon beating Oregon State, and then you play Oregon next week up in Eugene. Whereas if you lose this game, if you're UCLA, you play Stanford again like less than a week later, and even though it would be up at Stanford, that familiarity is going to be kind of there, and it's probably a slightly easier matchup for them, I would think. So my sense on this is, you know, I'm not saying UCLA is not going to try, obviously. I think they'll try and they'll give 100% effort, but I don't think they're going to you know, play it like it's a win or die situation. I think they'll just almost, not necessarily like a scrimmage, but they'll just treat it as, okay, if things don't work out, it's not the end of the world. And whereas Stanford, they have to win this game in order to ensure themselves a spot. So as far as this week goes, at least, I think Stanford wins on the road, but that doesn't necessarily mean that what you see this Saturday is going to be what you would also see next week if they meet up in Northern California. But I'll take Stanford.
But you know what? That's just one of those predicaments, and I knew that you was going to bring this up. But I really feel, as a coach, you can't sit there and say, I don't want to win this game or whatnot. And Jim Mora has did a really good job. I think, just like you feel that if you're fighting, you continue on. But if you're fighting and it, oh gosh, Stanford got a 14-point lead, you might want to just take the pedal off the metal, you know, for one of those deals. So I feel that UCLA is going to win this game because how they beat USC and how they've been looking all year long. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they up and down, but this is a team that he actually brought back to some life. And I'm not saying they're back or anything, but it's good to see UCLA back balling.
Right, and I just think Stanford will find a way to build off their win. And also, to that same point, though, is with UCLA, it's not even so much, you know, Stanford being a better matchup, because Stanford just beat Oregon head-to-head, but it's more of, okay, if you don't beat these guys, you not only get a rematch against them like right away, but you have the most recent film that there's going to be of them anyway at your disposal, because they played you, and you could maybe get, you know, if you play them in a Pac-12 title game, like this Saturday, you could be pretty vanilla with what you do offensively, defensively, whereas in the Pac-12 championship, you know, you throw a lot more tricks out there, catch them off guard, and maybe show them things that they won't see on film or that they don't see this Saturday. So I think those are some things to keep in mind. But I just like the direction Stanford's going right now. I think they'll find a way to win on the road.
I was going to say, Here's my thing with Stanford. You're going to get Stanford's best punch for the most part. If you, you know, if they have to beat them, just like you said, and then they're in, it's a for sure. But, you know, you sit here and you're like, okay, do I want to leave my marbles with Oregon, a team that we just beat and have a lot of motivation in going to their rival game? And the reason why I say that is because UCLA won. They're playing at home this game, and you're going to see Stanford's best punch because they want to make sure they get in there without any help. But then at the same time, is that you got to go to Stanford, and you're going to see their best punch and on a road. So UCLA got a lot to think about, but you don't want to go to Oregon, just like you said.
Right. And here's the thing. If Oregon wins, that solidifies UCLA going on the road regardless, because either they're not going to have as good of a record as Oregon, or they're going to lose the head-to-head to Stanford. And whereas, you know, if Oregon State wins, the only way UCLA could have the Pac-12 title game at home is if Oregon State beats Oregon, and then UCLA wins, because then Oregon's completely out of it. And, like, this game on Saturday wouldn't even matter regardless of the outcome. It would just determine home field for next week's game. So,
and I think – I was going to say, I really think that with a UCLA win, they're going up that BCS right. bowl, you know. So, they're really thinking about it.
I give UCLA credit. They are – they've legitimately earned the right to be playing this year as opposed to last year just kind of benefiting from USC's issues. Moving along, you got – another in-state rivalry down in South Carolina. You got the Gamecocks. They've been able to win games even without Marcus Lattimore after he suffered his season-ending injury. But they go on the road against Clemson. Clemson's 10-1. The one loss is to Florida State, but that's what's keeping them out of the ACC title game next week. However, you know, the Tigers win at home here. They have a shot possibly at being in a BCS bowl game, possibly like the Sugar Bowl. And so there's plenty at stake for them. I look at this as a game where the defenses, I think it will be a low-scoring game. But with Lattimore out, I think Clemson's – the playmakers Clemson has on offense are going to end up being the difference. Maybe not so much on the scoreboard, but just in terms of being able to make plays and keeping South Carolina's defense on the field. I think Jadeveon Clowney would have to have a huge game in order for the Gamecocks to win. Combine all that with this game being at Clemson, I think the Tigers win.
I was going to say, Clowney possibly won't be playing this week. Yeah. That's a rough one here. As much as South Carolina has had the momentum here the last couple years or so, I think Clemson has said, hey, that's enough. They're at home. And it's a huge game, and a lot of people will be looking at this game. And I know with South Carolina, their conference is pretty much crushing them also from a BCS bowl bid. But I'm sure they're going to go out there and give it all they have, but I think it's too much Clemson at the end of the day.
And I'll just say this, too. If it's between Clemson and a Big 12 team with two losses, whether it's Oklahoma or Kansas State, Clemson's going to have a legitimate beef here because 11-1, your one loss is on the road to a Florida State team that's probably going to win the conference. And a lot of people thought at the beginning of the season might play for a national championship. That's not bad at all. And it's I know the schedule isn't completely what anybody thought it would be going through the ACC and then playing Auburn, who's been terrible this year. But they've handled their business and they've, you know, done what they need to do. So I think there's a lot of incentive for Clemson here. I think they'll find a way to win at home.
I was going to say that was Auburn's best game, I think. They personally played against Clemson in the beginning of the season. And I know a lot of people sit here and be like, wow. Right. But they actually played a really good game in the beginning of the season here.
And finally, you got Saturday night. Obviously a huge game because even though USC's not ranked anymore after losing to UCLA last week, they're at home against Notre Dame, who's currently number one in the country. It's fairly obvious here if the Fighting Irish get this win at the Coliseum Saturday night, they're going to play in the national championship game against most likely somebody from the SEC. But, you know, things could still unfold here in the last couple weeks. But Notre Dame wins, they're in. USC, the big story here, Matt Barkley not being able to go because he hurt his shoulder against the Bruins last week. As a result, not being able to play on a senior day. Can USC pull the upset with a redshirt freshman at quarterback here, or are we going to be talking about Notre Dame playing down in Miami on January 7th?
I think this game comes down to the defenses. The reason why I say defense is, yes, we know that Notre Dame has a pretty solid defense on their own, but USC has a defense where, you know, you scratch your head when you know that Monty Kiffin has always had a really good defense there in Tampa Bay. But and USC has had a lot of problems this year or whatnot, but Notre Dame offense, I personally don't feel that poses enough threat to sit there and say, hey, they're going to beat USC. But with Barkley being out, it's a whole different deal. I think USC has enough playmakers to win this game at home. And the reason why I'm saying it at home, because I think Notre Dame is starting to feel themselves too much. You know, a lot of people sitting there pumping their heads up and things like that. I really feel that USC's athletes on defense will be able to stop Golson's offense.
You know, if you had told me 3 months ago that when these teams are going to play each other, that one of them would be unranked and the other would be number one in the country, I would have probably agreed with you, but I would have had the opposite mindset because I thought USC, you know, they were preseason number one. They were my pick to win it at the beginning of the year. And I didn't really think much of Notre Dame at the start, but they've proven me wrong. Look, I'll just say this. If Matt Barkley was playing Saturday night, I would be more inclined to pick the Trojans here. But without him, I just don't see it. And I think Notre Dame's going to be able to move the ball on USC's defense. And just in addition to that, I not only think Notre Dame will end up winning this game and playing in the national championship, but I'll take it a step further. If Manti Te'o has any sort of play where he either, you know, has a defensive touchdown or just, yeah, impacts the game, it's a game-changing moment Saturday night and that goes in Notre Dame's favor, I think he's going to end up being the second defensive guy to win the Heisman Trophy. I really do. I know a lot of people are going to be high on Johnny Manziel, including yourself, but to be able to have, you know, constantly on a big stage, whether it's, you know, against Michigan, against Oklahoma, against Michigan State, after all the tragedy he had to deal with at that point in time, to have another, like, moment like that against USC, against a rival on the road and at the end of the season to leave that last final statement, if you will, I think that could end up swaying a lot of voters. And, you know, with Notre Dame being in the picture for a national championship game, I think you could end up seeing him very easily coming home with some hardware and taking it back to South Bend.
Yeah, I think it just comes down to, just like you say, it comes down to the defense. And I really feel that Notre Dame has to impose their will on USC's offense, because if this quarterback that's young, you know, when you have young quarterbacks, you always want to have a good supporting cast. This kid has a great supporting cast. Is if he's able to get off, let those running backs run the ball, let them get comfortable back there, and he's able to get that ball off to Robert Woods and Marquise Lee, I really feel this game will be over with, and I think it'll be over with fast just because it's in the Coliseum.
So you like USC to pull it off?
I like USC to pull off the upset.
All right, and then finally, you got Friday's game at 11 a.m. at Kinnick Stadium. Iowa, it's their last game of the season. They're 4-7, and they're not going to a bowl game regardless of what happens. Nebraska comes in at 9-2, has a chance. If they win, they're in the Big Ten championship game, and they have a shot, and all they'd have to do is beat Wisconsin and go to the Rose Bowl. So there's a lot at stake for the Cornhuskers here. 11 a.m. kickoff. It's on ABC for those of you that are just going to watch the game on TV or aren't able to find a ticket to Kinnick Stadium Friday. Does Iowa have any hope whatsoever here, or does this season just come to like a merciful end for them and Nebraska just kind of finishes it off?
As Mike Leach said, this is going to be an off season for the ages. I really feel that's going to be that here out here in Iowa. I personally feel that the Hawkeyes has no chance. I really feel that Nebraska is here and they're coming here for a mission. They got a Rose Bowl berth here, not a Rose Bowl berth, but a Big Ten Legends division championship on the line here in Iowa City. The championship trophy will be here and things like that. They smelling it, you know, and they feel that they're going to win it. I personally feel that they're going to win it also, because Iowa's just completely depleted right now. These guys, I mean, Nebraska can't be any happier than to run into a struggling team that's dangerous, but I don't really feel this team is as dangerous as, you know, you would say if we were had a team that's okay, we just underachieved. This team just beyond underachieving right now. These guys just playing like it, no sense of urgency, and if you don't have your starting linebackers going, Martinez is going to have a ridiculous game.
I'll say that I agree that Nebraska wins, and I may have kind of given it away earlier, but yeah, I do think Nebraska wins. I'll say the Huskers win this game. I'll go 38-17. I think it could be very similar to what you saw this past weekend up in Ann Arbor. Really, as far as Iowa's chances, the only realistic shot I see them having in this game, or at least keeping it close, if not pulling an upset, is a whole thing with ball control. And I'll give you two different aspects here. One is time of possession, keeping Nebraska's defense on the field. Maybe you can wear them out a little bit, and you keep Taylor Martinez and Amir Abdullah and Rex Burkhead, if he does play, and Kenny Bell, you keep those guys on the sidelines, keep them from making big plays. The other aspect of it too is with turnover margin, because remarkably, Iowa still has the best turnover margin of any team in the Big Ten. And if they can force any sort of turnovers, if they can, you know, get Taylor Martinez to struggle, maybe have him throw a pass that, because of his mechanics, that, you know, he makes a mistake and it gets to his head early on. You know, if Iowa can build any success off of that, that's how they're going to have to stay in it. But right now, I just don't know if they're going to be able to do it, because this defense just looks shot. And I don't know if it's the scheme or the personnel, combination of both, what have you. But combine all that with just coming off of a short week. Nebraska's used to this because they played on Black Friday over the years, whereas this is the second time Iowa's done it. And I know being at home should help, but that's going to probably be negated by all the red that's going to be in the stadium Friday. So all that being said, I think the Huskers win. It's going to be a pretty easy win for them, probably. And, you know, we're going to be talking about Iowa finishing 4-8 in a season where a lot of people, you know, 3 or 4 months ago were thinking, when they look at the schedule, oh, hey, they should get off to a 5-0 start given who they're playing. They don't even get the 5 wins. So I'll say Nebraska wins 38-17. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Hawks podcast. We're going to actually have 2 more podcasts here this year. We'll have one again next week that recaps Friday's game and looks ahead to, you know, some of the games next week, including the Big Ten Championship, which will probably feature, we know features Wisconsin, will probably feature Nebraska. And then we'll have another one, last one, sometime in December. I don't know exactly when. It'll be before Christmas. We'll just kind of look back on Iowa season, discuss what we both feel this program is going to have to be able to do going forward, and then we'll also look at some of the bowl games as well. So we'll have 2 more podcasts. Chris, I want to thank you again, as always. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. And a reminder, you can follow Chris on Twitter at CRow34. You can follow me on Twitter at TheBeastStyles. And you can follow HawkeyeDrive.com on Twitter at HawkeyeDrive. I want to thank Brandon Vogel from Hail Varsity again for joining us this week. And for Chris and Brandon, I'm Brendan. Signing off. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and have a good time at the game if you're going on Friday, regardless of how things turn out. And enjoy the time with your loved ones. Take care.